As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Hello. Happy Wednesday, everybody. He's James. I'm Kyle. Jiffy Lube sponsors the show. We have a Kings-Warriors game tonight, and we're not even going to open with it because there's so much other stuff going on in the world.
Okay.
If it's up to me, I would never talk about the Warriors on this program at all. But
well, you and me both, Kyle.
They stink. They're not even... The worst part is, like, if you're going to stink, at least be fun to watch. Like, at least be, like, fast-paced or... every game is 140 to 130. Being slow paced and boring and losing all the time, where you're not even putting up 100 points regularly in the NBA in 2025. Oof.
There's nothing worse than being
a dreadful, dreadful basketball program.
Bad and boring. Bad and boring is the worst.
The worst thing you can be. Yeah. It's the worst thing you can be. We'll get to the Kings and to Golden State. Big game for the Kings tonight as they look to sweep a three-game homestand. A ton of NBA trade rumors heated up last night, but some NFL news this morning that impacts the 49ers defensive coordinator search, which we talked a little bit about yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So Liam Cohen is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive coordinator, just did a sensational job this year. He's fantastic. You're going to hear his name a lot, especially in next year's hiring cycle. I don't think he's going to be around more than a year, more than the 2025 season with Tampa Bay. I think he gets a head coaching job next offseason. But he was the favorite to go to the Jags. He was supposed to have his second interview today with Jacksonville. And Rick Stroud from the Tampa Bay Times reported yesterday that, hey, the Buccaneers are bracing for Liam Cohen to leave. They believe he's the favorite to land the Jags head coaching job. It's like, that's great news for the 49ers because Robert Saleh is also one of the people getting a second interview, but he's also at the top of the 49ers defensive coordinator list. They need him to not get that job so they can hire him as a defensive coordinator.
Mm.
News broke today via ESPN's Adam Schefter that Liam Cohen is pulled out of the running for the Jags job, leaving Patrick Graham, the Raiders defensive coordinator, and Robert Saleh, the former Jets head coach and former 49ers defensive coordinator, as the two candidates receiving second interviews, and it's unclear whether they favor Saleh or Graham. And we are barreling toward a scenario where the 49ers' top three defensive coordinator candidates, two of them don't even get into Santa Clara for interviews, and the third one gets a head coaching. The third one and the guy at the top of the list gets a head coaching job. And they're stuck at the end of January with no defensive coordinator and no viable candidates.
This is not ideal, Kyle.
I don't know how they got here again.
It's not ideal. I don't know. Like, at this point,
indefensible.
Like, it's got to be a massive scramble. But then again, if you think about Saleh as like a potential, you knew what you were up against.
Sure.
You knew that there were going to be head coaching job opportunities for him, that he's a very, very good coach, and that you would hope that maybe he would be with you for a year. And sort of set the program back the right way and maybe give you time to develop someone else. I just can't imagine that Brandon Staley is an option at this point. And if he is, what a bungled offseason again.
If he's an option at this point, I can't imagine that's going to be popular with the 49ers. There's no way to spin it to the fan base.
No.
There's no chance that that's happening. So... I we'll see here, man. Either way, maybe it's fine. Maybe Saleh has said, yeah, I'm going to interview, but I have no intention of taking the job, which is kind of what it looked like Cohen did.
Hmm.
it looked like he went in and went, well, it's what, first of all, it's what Ben Johnson, the former Lions OC who got hired by the Bears, went, nope, I'm not working for Trent Baalke. I don't rock with this.
Yeah.
And didn't take that job. You've got Liam Cohen, the next best offensive head coach or offensive coordinator head coach candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at Trevor Lawrence, Brian Thomas, Travis Etienne? Yeah, Trevor Etienne is the one that's a Georgia going into the draft. Travis Etienne, Tank Bigsby, Evan Ingram, and going pass. Oh, boy.
That's tough because they do have some talent on that side of the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they should be good. That should be a place an offensive coordinator wants to go. And it's not because Trent Baalke is a mess. From the Sala side of things, why would, outside of money, let's remove the financials for a minute, because maybe if he's driven fully by money, then so be it, but I don't think he is. Beyond money, I don't know what the motivation would be to take this job, specifically for Robert Sala. Because you did not have a good record as the Jets head coach.
No.
And whether he deserved to be fired or not, he was fired after 5 games and was well below 500. I think they went 4-13 in 2 of the years he was there. And this next shot that you have as a head coach is probably your last shot to get it right.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah.
What? And you're going to bank it on the Trent Baalke Jags?
Yeah, you're not a top three quarterback that came out in the draft and busted, and the first stop gets a second opportunity, and then every once in a while gets a third opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way it works with the coaches.
Not even a little bit.
Yeah. So this is tough. You need to make the right decision here. And look, I don't know what the right decision is to go back to the 49ers the way they played last year. Maybe it's not the right decision. Maybe mm-hmm. you can't fix what's going on with the San Francisco 49ers defense.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wouldn't be a candidate afterwards. But, man, you got to choose the correct spot. You got to really, really, like, you have an opportunity to rebuild your brand and then go out there as like a big-time head coaching prospect.
You want to put your head coaching future in the hands of Trent Baalke?
Nope.
Who's gotten, what, 5 coaches fired?
He fires them.
I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm out. But again, maybe he wants to live in Florida. Maybe he loves the situation there in Jacksonville. Maybe he would prefer to be a head coach and a defensive coordinator. I don't know. But that's not the job I would want to take. On the 49ers side of this, if they end up losing out on Sala and they wind up with Brandon Staley, and I saw a question from Alfonso Valdez in the Chatty House that we'll get to in a second about Brandon Staley specifically. But if you wind up with Brandon Staley or Deshae Townsend, who's Detroit's defensive backs coach, who's never been a defensive coordinator.
Yep.
This process is an indefensible flaw from Kyle Shanahan. Indefensible. You know me. I will stand in front of Kyle Shanahan on 95% of things. This is one of the things that there's no talking around it. There's no justifying it. They did not have an adequate backup plan if they lose out on Robert Sala.
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
And if they did, it was 2 coaches who have since been hired in the meantime. Will they sit around and wait? It's such bad process. And it's the second year in a row that they have had bad process. I don't know, we talked about this yesterday, but they are even closer now than they were 24 hours ago to losing out on Robert Sala.
Yeah, to me, it would just be like the biggest slap in the face. I mean, even for players who may or may not come in as free agents, like I would want to play for Robert Sala.
Sure.
Like he is a very, very good defensive coordinator. And a guy that I think has a huge draw around the league. Like he's one of those like passionate football coach guys.
He is a leader.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see it. And that's why he's up for head coaching jobs. But man, he's got to choose the right decision. He's got to make the right decision for him. And at the same time, I would also say that the 49ers have to figure out a way to load up on a couple other guys here. You know, you've got to find other options right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't be Staley. Just can't be.
No, so Alfonso Valdez in the chat said, not trying to troll, but wasn't Staley good as a defensive coordinator in his 1 year in LA? And he was. That's they were the, I think, number one in scoring and yards allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Or they were certainly top 5 in both. They were awesome. my pushback on that is a couple of things. One, they had prime Aaron Donald and prime Jalen Ramsey.
Yep.
On top of a ton of other talent. So that's helpful. But his tenure with the Chargers as their head coach was a disaster.
Yeah.
Which I think makes players view him differently. He was the assistant head coach in charge of the like takeaways meeting. The Niners defense has a big meeting about takeaways, different ways opposing teams carry the football, different things they do, tendencies the quarterback has where a corner might be able to jump a route, whatever it is. They have these meetings, and they were one of the worst teams in takeaways in the second half of the year. I think after their bye week, they had two takeaways the rest of the year.
Ooh.
On top of that, he has a background in the Vic Fangio 3-4 base defense, three linemen, four linebackers. Mm-hmm. And the 49ers have pretty staunchly under Kyle Shanahan been a 4-3 defense, so it's either requiring Brandon Staley to shift his entire defensive philosophy in the scheme that he runs, or you're asking the 49ers to, in an offseason, overhaul their roster to become a 3-4 defense, 3-4 base defense, instead of a 4-3, which I don't think they're planning on doing.
Yeah.
So there would be a handful of issues with hiring Brandon Staley as the DC.
Yeah, it's just too much. And not only that, but leaving the Chargers, I mean, the dude had the cheese touch. Like, no one in the league wanted to get anywhere near him at all.
He did not get other DC interviews.
No, it's not like with Robert Saleh. Robert Saleh gets let go by the Jets and their team's clamoring for him.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very different situation. So, and then he steps into the 49ers and he's part of a staff that put up one of the worst seasons that they've had in a decade.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's that as well. Like, it did not go well last season for the 49ers. And I'm not blaming Brandon Staley for that, but the fact that he's there, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Like play out well for him. It's not like he's out there getting other jobs this offseason either.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, a little suspect here. I don't know what they do.
Tyler Jennings in the chat asked if they might switch up the wide nine. That's the defensive front they run, where basically the two ends are way, way outside the tackle. That basically gives them, so they don't have to turn the corner, they get a straight line to the quarterback. That allows you to do different things with blitzing and stunts and all that sort of stuff. That's the thing, if you see a scheme change with the Niners, that's what I think you'll see.
Okay.
The defensive line might look a little different this year, depending on how their personnel shakes out. Like, that's ultimately what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You have to match your scheme to your personnel. And so I think that's something that they'll definitely look into without getting too far in the weeds. 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320 is the Elk Grove Kia talk line. Go ahead, Don. You are on the Insiders with Kyle and James. What's up?
Kyle Hammer, what's poppin'?
What's up, man?
Hey, look, check it out. So this, hey, Kyle, how I feel about this situation, this is the perfect time for Jed York to strike. Why don't you go get Saleh? Saleh, you're the head coach, like we should have did in the beginning, made him or D'Amico the coach because they're both leader and men. Kyle, you are now the offensive coordinator. That's all you're worried about. Saleh, you're the head coach. I think that's the move to be made. Kyle, if you don't like it, you can be traded or whatever. But you're now the OC, not the head coach anymore. You're the offensive coordinator. Saleh, you're the guy.
All right, TC, in theory, if I'm standing in your shoes, I don't hate the theory, but we're on the same page that there's 0% chance of that happening, right?
I know. And
okay.
Listen, you know, Kyle, okay. I know. But
okay.
Listen, that's the move because he's a leader of men, Kyle.
Sure. Very good. Thanks, DC. Appreciate you. Yeah. I don't know. Kyle Juszczyk had some interesting thoughts on Kyle Shanahan as a leader and why he's been such a successful head coach, and it's specifically because of how he relates to players and leads. Mm. I think doing anything with moving on from Kyle Shanahan would be a disaster of colossal proportions for Jed York and the 49ers.
And it's like a month late, 3 weeks late, whatever. Yeah. Like, if you're going to do it, you had to do it back then. It's too late now.
Yeah. And if you're moving on from a head coach, you're not moving him to OC.
No.
You can move your former defensive coordinator to special teams coordinator if he wasn't ready to be a DC, which it looks like the Niners are trying to do with Nick Sorensen.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be like, all right, Kyle Shanahan, you're not the head coach anymore. There's going to be a different head coach, but Kyle Shanahan, you're still going to be the OC. That's not going to fly.
No, it's not going to fly. It's not going to fly at all. So we did have some breaking news.
Oh.
It, not Sacramento Kings related, but Mavs center Derek Lively sustained a small fracture in his foot and expected to miss 2 to 3 months.
My God, man.
Per Shams.
Jeez.
So I guess the Daniel Gafford on the block thing is over.
Yeah. Yikes, man.
Yeah, Derek Lively, a very, very good young player. 2 to 3 months, that is...
That's the rest of the regular season.
Yeah, at a minimum.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's tough, man. It's, especially for a big, you're not going to mess around with a broken bone in a foot. So, yeah. The hits keep coming for the Dallas Mavericks. That's per Shams.
The Dallas Mavericks are having a 49ers-type season, where they weren't playing great to begin with, but then, hey, Luka's going to be out for this amount of time. Kyrie's going to be out, and he's back, but he's got like this bulging disc that he's working through. Hey, and now Derek Lively, this young player you're really excited about, he's done for the regular season probably.
Oof.
Go ahead and go play, though. Good luck. Good luck getting back to the finals.
Yeah.
That's a brutal spot. But again, we keep talking about this with the Kings and climbing up the standings. This is one of the reasons that they don't even need to keep winning at a 970 clip or whatever they've been at under Doug Christie. Like, can you just keep winning a little bit? Because there's a bunch of teams that are by default going to start falling back.
No, I totally agree. Man. And you also, you know, there's rumors that there's a bit of a mutiny starting with the Los Angeles Lakers. They, you know, like LeBron and AD want them to be aggressive and go use those two first-round picks that they have out there. Like, this is a drama you're here for. If you're the Sacramento Kings, you're just like, just stay in your lane, just keep plugging away, keep climbing the standings, and avoid all the drama.
Just cruising along. It's so funny, the juxtaposition between the Lakers' top two guys, LeBron and Anthony Davis, going, trade the picks, to hell with your future, we're worried about now. Juxtaposing that against what Stephen Curry and Draymond Green have been saying publicly. Like, that doesn't make sense to make a trade. Don't want to ruin the future. Cool, guys.
Yeah, not cool. Great.
Really awesome. Love that.
Yeah.
Speaking of trade rumors, though, big moves in the NBA yesterday, but not player involved. Potentially dominoes falling for big player involved moves.
Mm-hmm.
So let's try and get into this. The Jazz and Suns, according to ESPN, agreed to a trade that would send follow me here. The Suns traded an unprotected 2031 first round pick to the Jazz in exchange for 3 first round picks, one in 2025, one in 2027, one in 2029. It gets a little more complicated than that. It's like the least favorable of Cleveland and Minnesota's pick in 2025. Then the least favorable of Cleveland, Minnesota, and Utah's picks in 2027 and 2029.
Yeah. So this is it's one of the strangest moves I've ever seen because...
I kept waiting because you saw the report of first round pick for 3 first round picks, and it's like, okay, but what players? Who else is involved? I'm like, nope, just picks.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know what to make of it because, like, look, the 2031 unprotected pick that the Phoenix Suns are giving up, like, it's a theoretical pick. Like, you have no idea what that pick is going to be. And I think we can all look at where the Cavs are today and say, okay, that 2025 pick is not going to be very good. I mean, we're talking about, like, there's potential for that to be, like, in the bottom 3 of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
So... That pick really doesn't have a lot of value.
Mm-hmm.
And the 1-2 years from now, it might not have that much value either because you're dealing with the same with the Cavs. But at the same time, we don't know what's going to happen by then. And you know, if you're the Suns, you're trying to release all of your other picks. So that's what this deal did.
Yes.
So they had a bunch of picks already like out the door to the Nets, I believe, as part of the Kevin Durant deal.
Right.
So by acquiring these 3 picks, they basically gave themselves access to their all 6 years of draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, Stepien rule issues. They were in a Stepien rule situation where they couldn't trade their picks because they couldn't trade back-to-back picks, right? Now they're in a new situation where they have these picks, so they can trade picks, but... Like, what is the value of those picks? I mean, they're basically the equivalent of, you know, a really, really good second round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A second round. The difference is a first round pick is guaranteed money. 3 years guaranteed money. That second round pick is not.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I still would almost rather have, like, the first two or three picks in the second round than the Cavs pick.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, I mean, you might lose six spots in the draft or whatever, but you're still going to be in a much better situation, like salary cap wise and everything else. This is a move to give them some draft capital, mm-hmm. and to potentially go out and complete a deal for Jimmy Butler. But in order to make that deal for Jimmy Butler, you're going to have to get rid of a bunch of contracts.
Right.
And you're going to have to attach these bad first round picks to those contracts.
Yeah.
So it's just a real basic, like, not all first round picks were created equal. And the picks that they just got in this trade are not very good. And that 2031 could be great, because we all know that Kevin Durant won't be here, won't be playing basketball by that point. But there is always possibility that the Suns reload and are better by that point.
Sure.
You just never know.
Right. So they unlock their firsts. Because now this is speculation from The Athletic. If you write for the NBA and write for The Athletic, you are on this byline for this story that they wrote.
Okay.
Like Sam Amick, John Krasinski, Tony Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say Sam Amick?
Yes. You can say it like three times if
all right,
you want.
Sam Amick again. it was Sam Vecenie, I think, was Rebecca Tauber, I think, was on it. It was insane. There's so many people. But anyways, so it sounds like the Suns are trying to line up the assets to make a deal for Jimmy Butler.
Mm-hmm.
The crux of it being Jimmy Butler would land with the Suns, Bradley Beal, should he waive his trade clause, which is a whole other issue here. Let's assume Bradley Beal waives his no trade clause. He would then go to Miami, but then that doesn't quite work because the Suns would need to unload salary because of the second apron. So they would need to like attach a first round pick to Yusuf Nurkic to get off his contract. Then the Bucks are the team to watch. This is according to The Athletic. I'm just going to read this verbatim here.
Okay.
Per league sources, the Bucks' motives would be twofold. Cut enough salary from their payroll to get under the second apron. That's the only way the Bucks can legally complete a trade while aggregating contracts. And also add a talented, highly paid player to play next to Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard, the NBA's top scoring duo. Whether that would be Beal or perhaps a star like Chicago's Zach LaVine in other potential scenarios remains to be seen. By the time, let's assume that the dominoes are falling and this is all going to shake out,
mm-hmm.
we might be seeing like a seven-team deal here that completely upends what the Suns look like, what the Heat look like, what the Bucks look like, what Chicago looks like. You're going to have a team in there that's just going to eat a bunch of salary. Maybe a team like, I don't know, like the Nets.
Yeah, what you're hoping is that this doesn't hold up everything in the league.
Correct.
And that could be a major problem. That's where if I'm looking around, I'm like, hey, can we make a deal quickly here? Because this thing's about to get really, really, like, dirty and weird.
Yes.
And we have no idea what's going to happen. And it could tie everybody up all the way till February 6th. And if we don't get a deal done then, you know, of course, the trade deadline comes and goes. Yeah, I think it's a really, really crazy twist in what could be a wild like trade deadline season.
Yeah. I'm with you. If you're the Kings, you have to call, and if there's a little bit of an overpay that you're not willing to make, if you want to get this deal done,
mm-hmm.
because this is the kind of thing, it sounds like there's 2 weeks from tomorrow's the trade deadline.
Something like
Thursday,
that.
February 6th.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two weeks from tomorrow.
15 days.
Right?
Yeah, 15 days. So yeah,
2 weeks right. from Friday. I feel like we've done this before. We've had this conversation before.
Well, there's 31 days in January, so that gives us 9 plus 6 is 15. 15 days after today.
Right. So tomorrow will be 2 weeks.
Yep.
if this is going to be that complicated, teams might be. They might have all 30 teams on the phone at some point where teams are going, okay, well, hang on. I might have this deal. We got it. You got to get in now. You got to figure this out today. especially if a team like Brooklyn or Utah is going to get involved in this mess.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're taking on salary and they're moving players like John Collins and Cam Johnson or getting a bunch of first back. This is where like the whole Kings unprotected first thing comes in for me. Send it. If you got to send, if that's what it takes to go get a Cam Johnson deal done, whatever.
Yeah.
If the Jazz want second round picks, but you go, hey, you know what? We can give you a top three protected first in whatever year, 28, whatever it is. Here, just take this. Let's get this John Collins deal done. Here's the salaries. I'm ready to overpay to get this done because the dominoes that started falling yesterday may suck up so much oxygen in the trade market that the Kings are left standing on February 7th with this roster.
Yeah.
Which, not the end of the world. Not like, oh my God, they're never going to win another game. But you don't feel as good about them going into the postseason. We'll talk about postseason rotations. We got into a little bit yesterday, but didn't quite dig all the way into that conversation. But you're going to the postseason not feeling as good as you would if you had John Collins in your rotation or Cam Johnson in your rotation.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this is a moment where the league can go sideways very quickly. And hey, maybe the Kings are involved. Maybe the Kings get into this and say, hey, look, the only way for us to help out everybody and to be part of this deal is for us to use our trade exceptions. And we'll use a trade exception to take on this contract, or this contract can go there, but our trade exception can go there. The first step of anything for the Milwaukee Bucks is they've got to drop $10 million off their books.
Yep.
And that's where, again, if you're the Kings, maybe you are able to play in some weird world where you can start, you know, like moving pieces to get into a better situation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like there is, you know, again, you could trade Trey Lyles straight up for Bobby Portis. That would save, you know, $4.5 million off the books for the Bucks.
Yeah.
Now they're going to want something else in that trade, but again, you're saving them, you know, upwards of in true luxury tax money, like 20 something million bucks.
Yeah.
So that has value as well. So yeah, it could get complicated here.
We will keep a very close eye on this, because there's just a chance that everything ties back to this deal. Like, everything that might happen in the NBA moving forward may be dominoes falling to get Jimmy Butler the hell out of Miami and to get him to Phoenix.
Yeah.
Like that I cannot believe that we are here in January of 2025 where the entire league is going to upend itself for 36-year-old Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, this is disaster. And that 2031 first-round pick, when Jimmy Butler's done with that Phoenix Suns franchise, that might be a really good pick.
I'm with you, man. Stuff changes a lot. Matt Ishbia seems ready to spend money to stay relevant, but as dangerous. As dangerous, for sure. All right, the Kings play the Warriors tonight. We'll dig into that game. We'll talk about more trade stuff. The Baseball Hall of Fame class was announced yesterday. Might get into that some. As well. And of course, any NBA breaking news, any NFL breaking news, we will have it for you live on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Leader. He's James Hamm, Kyle Madsen. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Back in a second.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. The Kings and Warriors playing tonight at Golden One Center. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Big game for the Kings, man. Not necessarily a tough game, but one that you look on the schedule, you look what's coming up, it's like, gotta have it. Not must win. Not must win. Not that crazy. We're not there. But you gotta get this one.
No, this is a big one. First of all, it would put you a game over 500 at home.
Yep.
Secondly, the Kings play tomorrow in Denver, and that's going to be one of the toughest back-to-backs. We talked a little bit about it yesterday, but we're talking about, you know, 3-hour flight, an hour ride from the airport. On top of that, we're also talking about, you know, like getting into the hotel at 4 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. for the second night of a back-to-back, an hour time change, all that stuff, and then playing at elevation against a team that's rolling out of nowhere. And so, yeah, you need to get this one, and you would like to get this one in one of those, like, getaway fashions. Like, it's over in the third, and you're not worried about, you know, extending your guys out major minutes. I would just caution everybody, like, look, the Warriors are not very good right now, but they still find ways to win games. And
do
so
they do.
I mean, they're still above 500, right?
No, or they are 500.
They're at 500.
And let's run through some of these. Let's run through some of these games that they've won recently. They beat the Wizards by 8. And that wasn't a, like, they were up a bunch and then the Wizards, no, they had to fight off the Wizards for 4 quarters to win that one by 8.
Okay.
They beat the Timberwolves by 1 in Minnesota. They led by 27 in the first quarter, I think.
Okay.
And by 15 in the fourth quarter. I believe we're the points there. Let's see. Let's go to that Pistons game. Same deal. Up a bunch on the Pistons. Pistons had a chance to win it at the end. Got hosed on a bad call. So the Warriors escaped there. Good win against the Grizzlies.
Mm-hmm.
Beat the heck out of the Sixers. Beat the Suns.
They're 3-5 over their previous 8, but 5-5 over the last 10.
I mean, they just lost by 40 to Boston. De'Aaron Fox had the right idea. Kick them while they're down.
I totally agree.
And this is the right... That's the right way to view this, where you don't go in and you get lackadaisical.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do that, you just throw your jerseys on the court. Okay, well, now all of a sudden, Steph Curry has 40. Oh, and Andrew Wiggins has 25. Oh, hey, and Gary Payton II has knocked down a couple of threes. And Buddy Hield's knocked down a couple of threes. And, oh, shoot, this is a 3-point game with 2 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
Kick them while they're down has to be the attitude, especially because when you look at the injury report, nothing for the Kings. But the Warriors, no Draymond Green. No Jonathan Kuminga, no Brandon Pajemski, no Kyle Anderson.
Yeah, it's wild.
And for those that like, Brandon Pajemski's not a great player, but an organizer on offense, can handle the basketball, does some little things. Kyle Anderson, same deal. Just a
career Kings killer.
Smart player.
Yeah.
Draymond Green, same deal. Anchor of the defense, can run the offense. And then Jonathan Kuminga was evolving into their second scorer, and now he's gone. They just don't have a second scorer.
Yeah, it's a problem.
They are a potential play-in team, and teams like that with the way the Kings are playing right now, and B, with the hole they put themselves in early in the year, this is a game you can't smoke this one.
No, I mean, you have to take it seriously. And the last time these two teams played, the Kings just crushed them, 129-99. And that's the attitude you have to come in with. Malik Monk was huge in that game, 26 points, 12 assists. You had a near triple-double for Sabonis, 22, 13, and 7. It was one of those games where the Kings were playing without De'Aaron Fox but trying to build something. Mm-hmm. And you also, in that game, you had some nice performances off the bench. I don't know that the Kings are going to get that tonight just because their bench hasn't been playing well at all. But it's a winnable game against a team that's down on their luck right now, and I fully agree with De'Aaron Fox. Kick him while they're down.
That's it. De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk, DeMar DeRozan, Keegan Murray, Domantas Sabonis, the starters for the Kings tonight. Just guessing here for the Warriors, this is what they did against Boston. They went Dennis Schroeder, Steph Curry, GP2 starting at the 3. That's like 6'2", Gary Payton II starting at the 3. Andrew Wiggins at the 4, and then Trace Jackson Davis at the 5. I'm assuming that's the way they go to start this one.
I would agree. And
is that they could put Kevon Looney or like Lindy Waters into the starting lineup, but I don't think they're going to want to do that.
Yeah, they're going to have a really, really tough time containing Domas in this one.
Yeah.
The last time they played, they absolutely, Domas crushed Trace Jackson Davis.
In like 28 minutes, right?
Jackson Davis was 0 for 3 from the field, finished the game with 0 points. 3 assists and 2 rebounds in 18 minutes. And I also think he was in foul trouble. He had 3 fouls.
Mm-hmm.
Sabonis only played, which he played like 30 minutes.
Yeah,
he played 30 minutes.
22, 13, and 7 in 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's like a walk in the park for him.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that difficult for him to put up that stat line.
Yeah.
And especially against, I really like Trace Jackson Davis. He's just young. And, again, he's limited offensively, super limited offensively.
Mm-hmm.
He can't. get away from the basket at all.
Yeah, if it's not the restricted area. I kind of wonder if he's taken any shots outside the restricted area this year.
I'm going to guess he's never taken a three at the pro level. No, I'm wrong. He's taken two threes in his career, missed both. In his four years in college, he took a total of three threes.
Trace Jackson Davis this year has attempted 260 field goals. Are you looking at his shooting chart right now?
Nope.
Okay. He's taken 260 field goals. How many of those are from outside of 10 feet?
I'm going to guess like 18. Less?
You got to go lower.
Oh, no. Outside of 10 feet?
Yes.
Six?
Four.
Four? What?
He has taken four shots from outside of 10 feet. Look at the shooting chart. I'll bring it up on the stream.
That's absolutely crazy.
So funny.
That's crazy.
I've never seen anything like this. Hang on. Let me get this.
The thing is, he's really good around the rim.
Good young, like developing big, but.
Yeah, in his rookie season, he shot 70.2% from the field. But of course, nothing was outside of 10 feet.
Look at this shot chart, bro.
Oh, that's crazy.
This is insane.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I 1, 2, 3.
I'm going off these numbers. These have got to be 10 feet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, one of those isn't 10. Yeah, so 4. So 1, 2, 3, 4.
There we go.
Yeah, that is wild.
That's ridiculous. And I would love to know this 3. That's probably with like no time left on the shot clock.
Yeah, it's got to be something weird, some sort of weird reason why he took a 3. That's why I think a lot of people were leery on him in the draft because you can't, you know, he can only play around the rim. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he's really good at what he does.
Yeah. He's not the kind of player that, like, Ivica Zubats is a player that when Domas goes up against him or Jonas Valanciunas is like, ooh, it's going to be a dogfight. Domas is going to get his, but he's going to have to work.
Yeah.
On both ends of the floor. With Trace, it's like, he's fine.
Yeah.
It's not quite there yet. Yeah. This is a game the Kings should roll. And we'll have keys to victory a little bit later, but this Warriors team has shown time and time again, you punch them in the mouth early, it's over.
Yeah.
There's just, they
well,
don't.
Well, that and they'll
they
leave you in it too. They can take a big lead and they'll mm-hmm. let you back in.
That's it. Matchup of the game is Keon and Steph.
Oh, I totally agree.
That's the that's going to be the fun battle. That's the one-on-one thing worth watching.
I know Keon's he be chilling, right? That's mm-hmm. what just be chilling. So I get that. I am a little worried about him chasing Steph on a little bit of a ankle sprain, but we'll see. I mean, he's not listed on the injury report.
Throw Keegan at him. De'Aaron can hold his own. Yeah, they have enough bodies, but the Keon versus Steph one is fun because Keon got the better of him in that play-in game last year. But it's typically not. This is 36-year-old Steph Curry at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He starts to figure defenders out, and so watching that little chess match is usually fun. So I'm interested to see what that looks like and what Keon has for him. That's a little bit different than what he's thrown at him in the past.
No, that's a great matchup, and I'm really intrigued to see if Keon can stay out of foul trouble and really be impactful on him. And like, look, there's no one else to really guard on that team. I mean, Wiggins can go get some points against you, but
yeah, Wiggins has been fine.
Yeah,
but
for whatever reason, they won't play Moody. Moody steps on the court, gets 15, walks back to the bench, and he plays 12 minutes. You're like, all right.
Goes 3 of 4 from three, grabs a couple of sick rebounds.
Yeah.
Back to the bench with you. We got to get Pat Spencer in the game.
Yes, some random dude. We got to make sure that Lindy Waters gets in the game.
Hey, Lindy Waters can shoot it.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Lindy Waters on the court, well, he probably will play a ton for the Warriors tonight, but that just goes to show where they're at, and that's why the Kings have to go get this one.
Yeah.
Brutal road schedule coming up. You got the back-to-back in Denver, like you just mentioned, then you get a day off, and then you're in New York.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cross-country flight against two good teams. You can't smoke this one, because if you smoke this one, you have a real opportunity to go back below 500.
Oh, yeah.
And so you don't want to do that.
Keep the momentum going.
That's it.
There it is.
Keep it rolling, man. All right, James is there. I'm Kyle. The Kings looking to sweep their three-game homestand. We'll have keys to a Kings victory coming up for you in a bit right here on ESPN 1320. That is Sacramento Sports Leader. Man, if they win tonight, I don't know that the Kings will see the 500 mark again.
You hope not. You hope that they're just building, right?
I thought about this yesterday, and I didn't really dig into it. But let's wait, nope. Not the page I wanted. This is fine. This is all good. I'll learn how to do this someday. The Kings are two games over.
Mm-hmm.
At 22-20. If they go to 23-20 with a win tonight, that allows you the leeway. You can lose to Denver and New York.
Oh, yeah.
And still be a game up. And then you get Brooklyn. Then you get the 76ers. So you can get back to three over.
Yep.
Then you play Oklahoma City. And then you play Minnesota. You can then lose those two and still be above 500 coming home to play the Magic.
Yeah, so you're thinking a 2-4 trip. Mm-hmm. I think they can go 3-3 on the trip.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going worst case scenario. Like, yeah. This is, yeah, yeah. You could, if you win tonight, you can go 2-4 on that trip and still be above 500 coming home to play the Magic.
Yeah, and then you have that stretch of games there where it's the Magic. You got Dallas, I think, once you, and then you
get,
have,
you get Portland.
Okay.
New Orleans. Two bad teams.
Yep.
You get, and that's, you mentioned this, and it's a great point. You get New Orleans 2 days after the trade deadline.
Oh, yeah.
So that might be a just gutted New Orleans team. Then
or
you get,
a completely disenchanted New Orleans team who did nothing and sitting there like, what in the world just happened?
Right.
We're going to lose Brandon Ingram for nothing, or there's a possibility of it.
Yeah. Then you get the Mavericks, who we just mentioned, mm-hmm. have a bunch of dudes hurt. Then you get two more against the Pelicans. Then you get the Warriors again. Then you get Charlotte. Then you get Utah.
This is a moment, Kyle.
Dude, this is it.
This is it.
Stay. Just don't do something dumb. Don't go like 1-5 on this road trip.
Yep.
And you're fine. Like, this is it. This is the stretch.
But you got to start tonight with the game against Golden State. You can't take them lightly.
Yep.
And I think the Kings have handled their business. They have not lost at home under Doug Christie.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's huge because no other coach has been able to figure this out. Doug has figured it out by making sure they understand what it means to the people who are paying for their tickets. And I think that that's an interesting avenue. You know, whatever it is that these guys got to do to get right mm-hmm. at home, like, it just hasn't worked out. I mean, there's no reason. Again, they went 48 games a couple of years ago, and 25 of those came on the road. That's just not good to have a better road record than a home record, especially when you have a really good fan base.
Yeah, unless you're doing something like going 31-10 at home and 32-9 on the road.
Yeah.
Unless it's something silly like that.
Yeah, where you win like 63 games.
Yeah,
but
going sub 500 at home for a team that should be in the playoffs is not an acceptable thing.
No.
Shout out to whatever Doug said or did.
No, I totally agree. And if you win tonight, you have an opportunity to climb to the seventh spot because Dallas is at 23-20. You're at 22-20, and you're right there within a game or maybe a half game of the Lakers. So like it's right there in front of you. The opportunity here for the Kings to climb out of this thing, and to make themselves part of the. Not just play-in discussion. They're in the play-in discussion out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about playoffs. They have an opportunity to get into the playoff discussion at the midway point in the season, and that's huge.
We talked about not getting over our skis yesterday.
Yep.
And I think that's still important. I don't want to put the expectation on this team that, hey, if that anything less than a conference finals appearance is a failure, because you don't want to, you don't, if they go to the second round and they go to seven games in the second round and lose, you feel great going into next year.
Mm-hmm.
That would not be a, oh my God, maybe they do have to tear it down. Like that would be tangible progress. So I don't want to put that kind of expectation on them. I don't even want to put like going to the second round. Maybe they just get a bad matchup in the first round.
Yeah.
Weird stuff happens in the NBA, but I do think where I want to go in setting expectations is what you just said. Like, this is no longer about like, oh, can you stick around in the play-in? There's no reason at this point to me, based on how things currently sit on January 22nd, that the Kings shouldn't finish with a top six seed in the West.
You'd hope.
They're going to pass the Mavericks just because the Mavericks, we talked about attrition yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
the Mavericks are going through it right now injury-wise.
Oh, they're just gutted.
So you'll pass the Mavericks. That gets you to 7. I don't think the Timberwolves are a major threat to sneak up behind you.
They could get it going. Just so people know, the Mavericks, just the Mavericks play tonight against Minnesota. Luka Doncic out. Dante Exum out. Quentin Grimes questionable. Jaden Hardy out. Derek Lively is listed as questionable, but now we know he is out for 2 to 3 months. Najee Marshall questionable. Dwight Powell out with a right hip strain. Mm-hmm. Klay Thompson questionable. That's their team. Like half of their team is on the injury. Actually, like more than half. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
That's so brutal.
8 of their 15 rostered players, if they have 15, are on the injured list, whether they play or not. And a bunch of those guys just aren't going to play. Like, I don't know when Luka's coming back. They think they might be able to get him out there before the All-Star break, but I don't know if that's possible. And he does like to do that, show up like 2 games before the All-Star break and say, hey, I'm healthy enough, I can go play.
And yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah. Whatever. I don't think the Mavericks are climbing the standings anytime soon. I think they're going to go backwards before they go up.
Yep.
The Suns, I don't think, are sneaking up behind you. And then it's Golden State, San Antonio, all those teams. They're not a threat. Then there's the Lakers at the 6th seed. Did you know the Lakers have a negative point differential this year?
Yes.
They're being outscored by their opponents on a per-game basis, and they're 5 games over.
Mm. The problem is they've got, what, a 4-0 advantage on the Kings, right?
But if Sacramento continues playing well, I think those things even themselves out eventually. I think part of what we asked, like, what did Doug Christie say? What did Doug Christie do? I think part of it is just ascension to the mean. Like we talked throughout the rough start to the year, we kept looking at, you know, the peripheral numbers, and you go, this is not a 5 games below 500 team from a statistical standpoint. Like, something's got to give at some point. Yeah. I think that's part of it. And what Doug has done has helped. Whatever message he's delivering is helping. But I think that's part of Sacramento's turnaround. And I think you're going to kind of continue seeing that. And at some point, we're going to see the Lakers lose like 8 of 10.
I totally agree. At some point, LeBron is going to sit for a long stretch. And at some point, like, it just doesn't happen. Anthony Davis is going to miss time because he misses time every single year.
Well, he didn't last year.
Well, how many games did he play, though?
I don't know if people follow Laker fans on the internet.
Okay.
Or writers, bloggers, podcasters, etc.
Yeah.
Shout out to our guy Anthony Irwin. But they hate the Lakers. Nobody's like, wow, this team is awesome. Every Laker fan, everybody in the know, every objective person I follow who follows the Lakers is like, this team is not it. And that's why we're saying the opposite here in Sacramento about the Kings. It's like, hey, this team is it. And they're a move or two away from being like a very, very real threat.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm not talking play-in anymore. I'm not talking, oh, geez, hey, as long as you're the 7th seed and you can win that play-in and get that. Like, nah, man.
They're a threat to anyone outside of OKC in the regular season. Like, I mean, they can beat OKC, but as far as catching teams, like, they're a threat to anybody because I'm not convinced that Houston or Memphis is going to stay up that high.
Mm.
Like, they are going to come back to earth a little bit. Like, just where they're not posting, like, a ridiculous win-loss percentage.
Sure.
You know, like, are those teams that can win 60% of their games? Sure. But are they teams that, as of right now, I don't even know what their win percentages are.
Memphis is 65.1.
Yeah, that's high.
Rockets 66.7. But even, when the Kings get to 6 or 5 or whatever, we can talk about hot. This is a playoff team in this year's West.
Mm-hmm.
I said they should be, barring something weird.
Yeah, I'm totally.
And that's the lens I'm viewing all of this through moving forward.
I mean, you don't want to be a 4 or 5 seed if you can avoid it. I mean, a 4 or 5 seed. You'd rather be a 6-3, so then that way you avoid the potential of OKC in the second round.
Yep.
But like, look, I this is a team on the climb, and they look really good right now. So.
Yeah, I don't believe in the Lakers. Maybe the Clippers are good. I don't. 24-18. But
yeah, I don't know.
That's as far out over my skis as I'm willing to go.
Okay,
feel good about them as a top six team.
According to
when they start getting higher than that, then we can reevaluate.
According to Adam Schefter, the Jets are hiring Lions defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn as their new head coach.
Yeah, that looked like the way that was going.
Yeah.
Good for Aaron Glenn. Gets his shot as a head coach. The Raiders also hired a general manager, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. They're hiring Buccaneers assistant GM John Spytek as their new GM. Here's where I'm at. I know the Bucs have been a tremendous team-building outfit for however long now. They've just kind of been around. They brought in Tom Brady. They put the right pieces around Tom Brady, and they were going to Super Bowls and won a Super Bowl and all that. They were really good again this year, and I think injuries kind of caught up with them, specifically in the passing game where Mike Evans missed a bunch of time. Chris Godwin went down for the year, I think, in the same game. Everybody I know who is super tapped into NFL front offices is like, if the Raiders get Spytek, it's a big deal.
Mm.
So not only did they hire this guy who has like a unanimous approval rating from people in the know, but B, they hired the GM before they hired the coach.
Okay.
And maybe they miss out on the top coaching candidates because of this, but this is a guy, it looks like Tom Brady's pulling more strings than we thought he would.
Yep, because this is a guy that helped bring Tom Brady to Tampa Bay. Yep.
And now they can get on the head coaching search, so I'm really interested to see where that goes. Shout out to the Raiders. It was a little wonky to get here, but it appears they're doing the right stuff. We'll talk more Kings Warriors. We got keys to a Kings victory. And then we started talking about the Kings playoff rotation yesterday. I want to dig into that a little further with you. What I don't feel like digging into is how I've been doing at Underdog. Because I'm back on the losing side. I snapped a 10-game losing skid over the weekend, jumped back on the horse last night, and I'm back in the loss column. I had Tyler Hero higher than 22.5 in Underdog's Pick'em game. You pick higher or lower on at least two-player stats, and then you can win up to 1,000 times your entry. I had Tyler Hero higher than 22.5 points, didn't play. Josh Hart, he did not finish with a double-double, 12.7 boards. And then Chris Boucher for the Raptors, I had higher than 4.5 rebounds, finished with 2.
Oh.
So 0-for-2, and then they remove the injured player for you if they're in your lineup and they're hurt. They don't count towards your entry. So I went 0-for-2 technically on Underdog last night, but you know I'm back tonight.
Tonight.
Kings Warriors, Domas higher than 18.5 points. Malik Monk higher than 27.5 points, rebounds, assists. Feel good about it.
Okay.
Unless they wind up playing like 25 minutes because they're up 40.
Okay.
DeMar DeRozan, I'm going lower than half a made three. I don't think he's going to need to live on the perimeter for this one. And then Steph Curry, I'm going lower than 37.5 points, rebounds, assists. I think the Kings are going to throw the kitchen sink at him, and I think we're going to see Steph struggle a little bit against Sacramento tonight. Would love for you to play along with me. I would suggest fading that entry, by the way. Given how I've been going, I would suggest fading that. Download the Underdog app, sign up with promo code KYLEM, and deposit now to get up to $1,000 in bonus cash instantly. That's promo code KYLEM. Must be 18 plus and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncbgambling.org. All right, more Kings Warriors, keys to a Kings victory coming up next. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. It's ESPN 1320 on Sacramento Sports Center.
Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, that's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're rocking with you until noon. And we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC, and they'll take you up to 4 o'clock. And at 4 o'clock, the Purple and Black pregame show starts.
That's right.
Yeah. Tap in, me and James.
I'm excited. Yeah.
James Hamm there. I'm Kyle Madsen. keys to a Kings victory tonight against the Golden State Warriors at Golden One Center. Kings are going to go 3-1 against Golden State this year? 4-0?
Ooh. No, they're 1-0 against Golden State. Is that what
they've only played them once?
Yeah, like the weirdness of the schedule this year, they haven't played the Warriors a bunch. I'm pretty sure that's the case. They're 1-0 and they won by 30.
Wow. I thought they played once early in the year and then didn't see them again until late.
It was training camp.
But yeah, no, that's right. They play them today.
Okay.
And then they get them again March 13th. That's it? They only play, oh no, February 21st, then March 13th.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's right. They were late in the year and very spread out. Now I remember.
That's really weird that you have a January 5th, a January 22nd, February 21st, and March 13th. I like this.
This is how it should go.
I think it's okay to play teams outside of your division in groups,
sure.
Groups of games. So like the weirdness it is this whole playing the Pelicans three times in out of four, right? That's weird.
Yeah, you play between February 8th and February 13th, you play the Pelicans three times.
Yeah, that's weird. And that's all you play them all season long, right? I'm okay with...
you played them on December 12th as well.
Oh, my bad. So there is four games.
Yeah.
Okay, but if you're going to play your divisional games, I think that they should be spread out. I don't
agree.
Like what happened last year with the Warriors, where the Kings played the Warriors like three times before like November 19th mm-hmm. or something. And then this year, they played the Lakers, all of them in a row, and the Kings didn't fare well. They were in a downturn in their season, and now you've already lost your season series to like a division rival. And so that's not a good idea either. So I think if you're going to like play your divisional games, it should be spaced out like this. So you have a better sample size of the teams within a specific, like the Pacific division.
Yeah.
But they don't do it. Like sometimes they do like this, but, and again, the Kings, I think they've only played the they played the Clippers twice and they don't play them again till March 9th and April 11th.
Forgive me if you brought this up, but the Lakers stretch where they played them three times from December 19th to December 28th.
Oh yeah.
That's silly.
Yeah, for me, that for a conference game, a divisional game, that's not good.
Yeah.
Because you're not really getting a representative sample size. Like, again, players are hurt. You know, one team is on a good stretch, one mm-hmm. team's not. I think you should space out your, especially since they're all, like, relatively local.
I agree.
So.
I got so used to them playing Golden State once every 2 days, like they did from the end of the 22-23 season into the playoffs, into the...
Yeah,
preseason into the start of the 23-24 season. Yeah, so 1-0 against Golden State, looking to make it 2-0 tonight. How do they do it? We got keys to a Kings victory. Again, no injuries to report for the Kings. For the Warriors, Kyle Anderson, Draymond Green, Brandon Podziemski, and Jonathan Kuminga all out. And the usual suspects starting for the Kings. For the Warriors, looks like Dennis Schroeder, Steph Curry, Gary Payton II, Andrew Wiggins, and Trace Jackson Davis. So, James Hamm, key to Kings victory number one.
My first key, continue to prove that there's no letdown. Like, this team had a major problem with letdown games last season.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a major problem with letdown games to open this year. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've talked about it so many times, but you can't lose to the worst four teams in the NBA and expect to be a playoff team.
Yep.
That's just not the way it typically works.
Yep.
Like, those are gimme games. And I don't want to put the Warriors in that category right now, but I do say that the Warriors are not a great team right now at all, and they're just not playing well.
Yeah, in their current state, this is a game you have to get.
Yeah, this is a game that you're at home.
Yep.
You've got a 6-game home win streak. You've got a lot of positivity. You're 9-2 under Doug Christie. This is an opportunity to get to 10-2.
Mm-hmm.
Go and win this game because it gets a whole lot more difficult starting tomorrow in Denver, and it gets a lot more difficult this weekend in New York. And
yep.
So you got to start picking up games where you can pick up games.
Yeah, I think De'Aaron Fox, when he said you got to kick them while they're down, like that's the right attitude to take into this game.
Totally.
This is not they're super banged up and not playing well? Oh, great. Hey, we're taking the night off, boys. Like, no. Go kick the hell out of them.
Yeah.
Wear game 7 on your chest. Like, just carry that with you if you want.
6 minutes through the third quarter, get your starters out of the
yeah,
game.
Yeah, man. Hey, go. I'm right there with you. You have to do that. And that's a little bit related to my first key, which is get up early and they'll quit.
Yeah.
This has been a talking point in their post-game press conferences. Like, there's just no confidence. We start missing shots. We give up a run, and everybody deflates. Cool. Deflate them early, then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's... They get... The Warriors get dangerous when... Hey, if Steph Curry knocks down a couple of threes here, the avalanche gets rolling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's when... So, just make sure that a little Steph Curry flurry doesn't end the game for you.
No, I totally agree, and it sort of plays into what my second key is.
Yeah, we're professionals.
As well. Yeah. Stop Steph and make someone else beat you. Just, I know it sounds so incredibly impossible,
mm-hmm.
but just, you know, as soon as Keon Ellis gets in the game, he's chasing him.
Yep.
Before that, it's got to be De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox has got to stick, you know, he's got to stick with Steph and limit him. And mm-hmm. then you need help from everybody else. Like, this is not a very good, like, offensive team. And then look at all the players that are out.
Mm-hmm.
You can still get busted up by Wiggins. You can still get busted up by Moody. Buddy Hield can come out and hit five threes and make life difficult on you. But
if that happens, you tip your hat.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's. But seriously, would you in the hypothetical where the Kings lose this game and we come in tomorrow? The conversation is so much different if we're like, why didn't they do anything to keep Steph from scoring 45 points?
Yeah.
Versus, hey, Buddy Hield went 4-for-5. Andrew Wiggins scored 30. What are you going to do?
I guess the only way it works is if Steph scores 45, but you win by 20.
Sure.
You know, and that's not going to happen because Steph's not going to keep shooting. He's going to be on the bench if you're up by a ton.
Right.
So, right. Like, the best way to beat this team, jump all over them early, like you said,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of put your thumb on top of them and just end this game early.
Our second keys are basically identical. I think throw 2+ bodies at Steph.
Yeah.
Guard him full court if you want, and then when he gets across the timeline, make him give the ball up. Because this isn't because teams used to try and do this. It used to be, make Steph give up the ball, but then he's getting it to Draymond, who's going downhill playing 3-on-4.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to make the right pass or he's going to score, and it's going to be to Klay Thompson or it's going to be to Kevin Durant, and it's just like, what the hell do you do here? This isn't that. This is Steph is giving it up to, like, Andrew Wiggins or Dennis Schroeder or Gary Payton II.
Yeah.
In way bigger roles than they should be playing. So I think put 2 bodies on Steph, make sure you're not leaving him at any point, and I think if he's scoring fewer than 28, you're rolling to a win here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you.
Devote all resources to trying to slow down number 30. Number 3.
Number 3 for me is get De'Aaron Fox back in the scoring column.
Yeah.
I don't know if people saw yesterday, but during his media scrum after practice, which was early, De'Aaron Fox had his hand up, and the reporters were able to see what De'Aaron Fox's finger, what his pinky looks like when it's not taped to his ring finger. On his shooting hand, his pinky is completely bent straight forward. Like, he cannot move his pinky finger. It's stuck. And so they have to tape it to his ring finger in order to keep it straight and to keep it out of the way. That's what he's been dealing with since right at the end of training camp.
Gosh dang.
And clearly he's going to need a surgical procedure on that finger as soon as the season is over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no question. And he said, like, look, I have to have it taped, because he's like, you could see if someone throws me a ball right now, it will just jam my finger again.
Yeah.
And it will hurt. And like, but I also, like, it will bounce off my hand.
Oh.
And like, it's scary to see what his hand looks like right now, but I still think it's on the Kings right now. He has not had an offensive breakout game since he came back from the injury. And I think the injury, he's probably still recovering a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably still a little beat up. But I want to see him have a 25-30-point game. Just kind of get that feeling.
Yeah,
back.
Yeah, 1,000%. And just to kind of put a stamp on, hey, come playoff time, this is what this is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Come playoff time, this is De'Aaron Fox's team. And this is a good team to do that against. Number 3 for me, I want to see Keegan get aggressive. He's going to have somebody like Dennis Schroeder or Steph Curry or somebody like that guarding him. Go to the rack. Get into the post. He's so good down there. if you get the ball, put it on the deck and go.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily need to be a three. I think there's a chance that Keegan can really get rolling tonight, and I would like to see him be aggressive against whoever the Warriors are going to throw on him, because they're not going to have anybody that can match his size.
Yep. I totally agree. Yeah. Totally agree.
And that's how the Kings going to win. If they listen to us, they'll roll by 30. They'll get to rest their starters going into a back-to-back in Denver tomorrow.
It's science.
It's easy. It's easy work. It's just the NBA. Nice and easy. Night in and night out. Everybody knows it. All right. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. That's a joke. It's not an easy league. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Can't say, in all honesty, that I'm looking forward to watching this game tonight, but I'm sure Kings fans are. So salute to all of you guys. We're breaking it all down right here at 10 a.m. on the Insiders on ESPN 1320. That's Sacramento Sports Lead Up. All right. We're talking about the playoffs and the postseason. Same thing.
Playoffs.
Yeah. Now we're going to do it. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, but I want to dive further into it. The playoff rotation right now, because this is where the crux of the trade discussion comes in.
Mm-hmm.
It's what can you do to be better for the playoffs? It's not what can you do to be better in the regular season. It's what can you do to better hang in a postseason series.
Mm-hmm. I think we've gotten past that, oh man, they've got to make a move just to get into the playoffs.
I
think we're on the same page here, that we feel like this is a team that's on the rise and a top six team.
So we know who the starting five are. We know Keon's off the bench. And depending on matchups, depending on how the series is going, because again, you get into these seven game series and it's just a chess match, maybe the starting lineup changes throughout the course of a series. But going into a series, we know what the five is going to be, and we know Keon's going to be six.
Mm-hmm.
Trayce Jackson-Davis, 7.
Okay.
Nope. Trey Lyles, 7.
Sorry.
Will Z, stats.com, and Will Z of Sports Illustrated sent me the three-pointer that Trayce Jackson-Davis hoisted this year, the video of it.
Got it.
And so I was just looking at that, and I'm now trying to say
have
Trey
your brain
Lyles.
Work. Yeah.
So Trey Lyles is 7.
Okay.
Not advocating the Kings trade for Trayce Jackson-Davis. Trey Lyles, 7.
Mm-hmm. Where do we go after that? Are you just stopping there?
Who do we feel good about, 8?
I don't think you do at this point.
It's just mix and match. Devin Carter, Kevin Huerter.
Alex Len. Yeah, those three. And maybe there's a point where Isaac Jones gets on a run and Isaac Jones becomes part of a rotation. But again, in order for him to play in the playoffs, you'd have to make him a regular rostered player,
right,
and upgrade him from a two-way contract so he could actually be eligible for the playoffs. Hey, so
can I just say something on Isaac Jones real quick?
Yep.
He had 39 the other night.
42
the other night. I saw a lot of reaction to that. I'm like, oh my God, you gotta get, he's ready.
Yeah.
Bigs typically have an easier time scoring in the G League because the good bigs are playing in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
That's so you'll see some insane stat lines. That doesn't necessarily mean a guy's like, holy crap, he's ready to go.
Yeah.
So I think whatever's getting him minutes and playing within the Kings program and system is where he needs to be right now.
Yeah, I really do think that like there's an opportunity for him to be a player in the league. And what we've seen from him overall is really good. Like every time he's on the court, you like he stands out as somebody who is doing the right things. It doesn't mean that he's always doing the right things, but you know, we talked about this before. I had talked to him and I couldn't remember the second player. The two players he has watched a lot of footage of and tried to model his game after,
mm-hmm,
are Aaron Gordon and John Collins.
Mm.
And to me, that's who the Kings are. They've got to find that guy. And like, look, even if you were to go out and find and trade for a John Collins, that doesn't mean that Isaac Jones can't develop into that type of player and 2 years from now or 3 years from now be that player, or that he couldn't play alongside of John Collins. But yep, that's still like if you're a team that has, you know, top tier aspirations,
mm-hmm,
if we are saying right now we think that they're a top six team again, mm-hmm, where they had fallen off the map and all of a sudden they're back, right? A top six team doesn't typically rely heavily on an undrafted two-way rookie to help like support what they're doing going to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a knock on Isaac Jones. It's just the reality of year one.
It's not, this is not, there's no anti Isaac Jones conversation happening. If you're
he's a great kid.
I'm not sure if the undrafted rookie is ready to contribute to a playoff team. I don't even know if Devin Carter is ready to contribute on a playoff team.
Well, we just said we're not comfortable, like all that comfortable with Alex Len or Devin Carter or not, Kevin Huerter being part of that. Jay Crowder, I'm not comfortable. Doug McDermott,
My optimism about Isaac Jones has to do with next year and beyond.
Of course.
I don't, again, talk about getting over skis. He had a really, really nice game in the G League the other night. It's good. It's tangible progress.
Mm-hmm.
Does not mean he's ready to go play 20 minutes a night in the NBA.
No, but I'm super excited to see what he looks like after a whole summer of working out with a pro training staff.
Yes.
And not only like understanding the game better, but really understanding how good he is at certain aspects of the game and then honing those during the offseason, developing his three-point shot, coming back next season and saying, okay, can you break into the rotation?
Right. Can you play 12 minutes a night?
Yeah. Can you play 12? Can you play 18?
Sure.
Can you push somebody else for minutes? And and that's where like you're hoping that he gets, but there's no guarantee of that.
So I want to remove Isaac Jones from the conversation here for a second.
Yeah.
I just brought him up and I wanted to say that. Let Isaac Jones cook doing what he's doing. That's what I'm getting at. I'm really optimistic about him moving forward. So we have six. We have the Kings top six. Let's say Trey Lyles is, we'll say he's seven. If they trade for Cam Johnson, Trey Lyles is probably gone, correct?
There's a chance he's gone, but I think there's a possibility that just like the financials, you don't have to include Trey Lyles in a deal to get Cam Johnson. Cam Johnson makes like $22.5 million. Kevin Huerter salaries at $17 million. So if you add him, you would actually drop lower on the cap. You basically save like $2.5 million if you included Trey Lyles in that deal. So you can get a deal for Cam Johnson done, just the salary matching aspect, by adding any one of like four like minimum scale guys that you have on your roster. And okay, if you had two of them, you're really close to his contract.
So this is a point that KC has made on D'Lo and KC.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the right one, because let's say that we have the top six and Trey Lyles is seven and our goal is to get eight deep in a playoff rotation. If you're removing Trey Lyles from that conversation to bring in Cam Johnson, you're still that eighth player short.
Yep.
And no, Cam Johnson might be a little bit of an upgrade just in terms of like switchability and what you can do with him. But I think we're still looking at this roster at whenever the postseason ends for the Kings going, they still need that like eighth, maybe ninth guy that is really, really high quality in a playoff series.
Yeah. I mean, I think that what you're looking for is, well, the real difference between like bringing in a guy like Cam and having a guy like Trey on your roster is that Trey can play the four and the five. He can play small ball five for you. And in a playoff series, a lot of it's small ball five. A lot of it. Very few teams, number one, can keep their center on the court, let alone play a second center.
Right.
And that's where a team, again, if you look at like what Memphis is doing right now, it's like, okay, that works for right now, running Zach Edey out there. But in a playoff series, Zach Edey's going to play 5 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to hardly
go
get
eat
on
some
the floor.
Fouls. Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to go sit, and you're going to go to, you know, one of their much smaller guys, to whether it's Santi Aldama playing the five or it's, you know, Brandon Clark playing the five. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to downgrade that position as far as size. Mm-hmm. And that's where a guy like Trey Lyles really, really does come in handy. And so if I'm the Kings, I'm reluctant to give up Trey in any of those deals, especially with his affinity for being here and like all that stuff.
For sure.
If you have to give him up in a trade, then I would be more likely to give him up in a trade for a guy like John Collins, where John Collins, again, plays the four and the five.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
But again, this is where we have our six.
Yeah.
Or we have our seven. We're removing Trey Lyles and we're adding John Collins. Again, an upgrade.
Uh-huh.
But think you're still a player short.
I think, yeah. I mean, but
maybe Doug Christie and the coaching staff can mix and match that eighth player. Maybe Devin Carter is just a great matchup against Team A. Kevin Herter starts knocking down a bunch of shots. Okay, Kevin Herter's going to play a little more tonight. And it's a nine-man rotation where they're kind of mixing and matching who's getting the most minutes out of those eighth and ninth spots. Maybe.
No, I'm with you. I mean, I think that's the problem that a lot of us see with the way that this season's gone. I mean, I think one of the, like we talked about yesterday, a three-team deal, if you could somehow get Cam Johnson and a Valanciunas, now all of a sudden you have your seventh and eighth man. But I would warn people, too, Valanciunas is going to get played off the court in certain playoff series.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no way for him to keep up with some of the, you know, what we're talking about. Where he really comes in handy, number one, is if you need an enforcer,
mm-hmm.
and a game gets chippy, you put Valanciunas on the floor, and it either gets chippier or everything quiets down because no one's messing with him.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that he does is, like, if you do have a long-term injury with Sabonis, you now have a true backup center that can step in and start for any length of time. And I think that's the one thing that we keep, like, forgetting about is that aspect of this. When you're team building, it can't just be like, who are my best eight players, and then that's it, and I'm only playing for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be like, what happens if player X, Y, and Z go down?
Yeah.
And, you know, like last season, you lost Malik Monk, you lost Kevin Herter in the last 2 weeks of the season, didn't make the playoffs because of it.
And they've insulated themselves from that, I think.
I think a lot of it they have. Yeah.
If Malik Monk goes down, it's not great. Like, they are worse because of it. But, okay, a little more workload on De'Aaron Fox, a little more workload on DeMar DeRozan. Keon Ellis moves into the starting lineup. Maybe Devin Carter's playing a little bit more or more consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, you feel good about them winning games. But God forbid Keegan rolls an ankle with 10 games left.
Yeah. I mean, it's like,
God forbid anything happened to Domas.
Yeah.
Put him in bubble wrap, bro. Like, that's where, and not that Domas is so good, you're not just going to replace him. Like, you're not going to. But right now, it's like, all right, so you're starting Trey Lyles?
Yeah.
You're playing a bunch of Alex Len? Like, that's not it.
Well, I mean, if it's for any extended period of time, mm-hmm. I mean, your season's,
but if,
it's over.
But if you're putting Valanciunas in those minutes,
yeah.
I feel better about it.
Well, we just watched Valanciunas walk in against Sabonis and put up, what, 23 and 11?
Yeah.
Like, he still can play the game,
yep.
And he's a monstrous human being, and he's super close with Domas. Like, they both played together on the Lithuania national team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're very close as players. And so, like, that, I think that there would be a more willingness for Valanciunas to play a limited role behind Domas.
Yeah.
And there are also games where it's like, hey, if you, let's just say you get in a playoff series against Minnesota Timberwolves, and they're out there running, you know, like Julius Randle and Rudy Gobert.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, you know what, can we match up for a few minutes with Valanciunas and Sabonis against mm-hmm. those two? Is there another, like, if you go up against the Oklahoma City Thunder and they have a Chet Holmgren back, and, you know, again, Sabonis gets in foul trouble or something, you can go have him go in there and beat up on a couple of skinny, you know, power
sure.
forward center
mm-hmm.
players. So, like, look, there is value to him. And then I think the biggest one is, like, hey, if you match up against the Denver Nuggets,
more bodies to throw at Jokic.
Jokic, like, just keep throwing different looks at Jokic. One of those looks could be a huge, you know, physical player who isn't afraid to push people around. You go up against Memphis, and they want to run Zach Edey out there. Okay, let Zach Edey fight with two gigantic Lithuanian dudes all night long and
sure.
see how he comes out of the game, because I don't think it'll be very good.
No. I like Zach Edey, though. A little chippy. Got some nastiness to him.
Yeah.
Kind of rock with that. All right. You mentioned Nikola Jokic. Somebody on the internet last night asked a fascinating question about Nikola Jokic. Is he the best player in their sport right now? Is any athlete playing their sport as well as Nikola Jokic is playing basketball right now? We'll debate that next. We'll talk some more Kings. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320 and Sacramento Sports Leader.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Yeah, it sure is. Kenny Caraway of D'Lo and KC going to join us for the handoff in about 10 minutes. I'm going to run this question by him. I want to run it by you first, though. I saw somebody tweet last night. In fact, you know what? I'm going to go find the tweet because I want to give this person credit because I think they didn't ask this as a question. They said it as a statement, and I want to evaluate the statement to see if it's true. Mile High Mario on Twitter. No current athlete is better at their respective sport than Nikola Jokic is at basketball. My initial reaction was Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs.
Yeah, yeah.
Patrick Mahomes. That was my gut. But then you go look at what Mahomes did this year.
He was not good.
Yeah, he wins. He wins a ton. Like, that's indisputable. And if they win a Super Bowl, it will be his third.
Third in a row, but fourth overall.
If they lose, yeah, check this out. If they lose in the AFC Championship game in regulation, it would be the worst outcome of his career. The only other AFC Championship game they've lost is in overtime. And other than that, they've lost in the Super Bowl.
Wow.
That's insane. So it's like you stack all those things up, and it's like Patrick Mahomes is achieving levels of greatness that we've never seen before, before turning 30 in the NFL. But I don't know that Patrick Mahomes is better at playing quarterback than Nikola Jokic is at playing football or basketball.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated because what we can't do is on one hand say, like the discussion we had yesterday about Domas being judged by his playoff appearance or... Lamar Jackson being judged by his lack of playoff success, and then flip around and say, well, we're going to hold Patrick Mahomes to a different standard. He just keeps winning Super Bowls or going to the Super Bowl or going to the AFC Championship game every single year.
But the statement was not Nikola Jokic is greater in the NBA than anyone. Like, no, Patrick Mahomes Nikola Jokic won one title. A bunch of MVPs and he's great, but like just from a skill perspective.
Yeah, I mean, what you
can
say.
Shohei Ohtani.
Statistically speaking, I think you could make the argument that what Jokic has done over the last like 5 years is one of the greatest 5-year stretches in the history of the game.
Yes.
And it like the advanced numbers are wild. Like for him, they are off the charts good.
He's ridiculous. By the way, just this year, keep in mind, in the last 4 years, he has 3 MVPs and 1 runner-up finish. This year, he's averaging 30.1 points, 13.2 boards, 9.9 assists. That's a career high in points, a career high in assists, and nearly a career high in rebounds. He is shooting 47.5% from 3 on 4.3 attempts a game.
Yeah, I mean, like his numbers are so outrageous. It's crazy. Like, again, over the last 4 years, he's led the league in win shares. And it's not even close.
Yeah.
It's like 15.6, 15.2, 14.9. Last season, 17 was his win share.
Mm-hmm.
No one else, if I'm not mistaken, is even over like 12.
Golly.
So like his win shares per 48 minutes, his offensive box plus minus, he leads the league every single year. His defensive box plus minus leads the league every year.
PER, if you're into that.
Yep.
Led the league the last 5 years. His current, according to Basketball Reference, his 28.4 career PER is the highest of all time.
Wow.
And you mentioned offensive box plus minus, highest of all time, 7.2 for his career.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Box plus minus, 10.2, highest of all time for his career.
Yeah, win shares per 48, 25.9, highest in the history of the game. Those are his career numbers. And that's taken into consideration, you know, his couple of early years where he wasn't all that impactful as a player, yeah, where he didn't get all the opportunity. You know, we're talking about a guy who, you know, played 21 minutes a game in his rookie season and, mm-hmm, and 28 in his second, who went from 10 to 16.7 to 18.5 points per game. It's just this last stretch that is just off the charts, so incredible.
It's insane.
You know, like the only other, it's Lamar as far as a regular season. That so far, Lamar has put up, you know, what's he won? He's going to win an MVP. We can all kind of acknowledge that, right?
I think he should win his third MVP this year.
Yeah, so his third MVP, which would tie him with Jokic. But I don't think, has anyone ever won four MVPs? Yes, yeah, there have been four MVPs. Someone won five. But either way, I like, statistically, he is such an anomaly, and I don't know how to even, like, quantify it versus other players. No one has ever done what he's done with some of these statistics. And just so people know, you can overlay statistics on different years, like, right? So some of the advanced statistics that are new now, well, you can still use those and apply them to older players.
Yeah.
They're not just like, you know, again, there's no blocks at a certain point. There's no 3-point shot before, like, the early 1980s. So it's hard to add those things in. But, you know, Jokic led the league in true shooting last year. He had a true shooting number of like 70.1 true shooting.
Man.
I mean, that is just wild. Like what he's been able to do. So, yeah, I mean, we don't appreciate Jokic for how amazing he is.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I don't think people appreciate what Domas has done.
Sure.
Because his numbers get overshadowed greatly by Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
But you put his numbers, his advanced statistics, up against a lot of other players from the history of the game, and he's going to hold up just fine with multiple Hall of Fame players.
Lamar went 4,100 yards this year, 41 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Led the league in touchdown rate, 8.6. Led the league in yards per attempt, passer rating, QBR.
And then how many yards rushing and how many rushing touchdowns?
Yeah, that's just his passing numbers.
Yeah.
Then you get into his rushing stats, 915 rushing yards and 4 touchdowns. 6.6 yards per carry, also the highest in the league. He had the highest yards per carry and the highest yards per attempt. Pass attempt.
That's wild.
The other, like, Lamar had a really, really great year, an MVP level year. Shohei Ohtani's the only player, like, when we're talking about Nikola Jokic being the best player currently playing at his sport, Shohei Ohtani's the only guy in the conversation for real for me. Because you've got this guy who's a top-end starting pitcher who couldn't pitch last year and became the first person to hit 50 homers and steal 50 bases in a season.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only thing comparable to what Nikola Jokic is doing right now for me.
Well, that, and Shohei is a top, like, he's a top 2 or 3 starter even after, what, second Tommy John surgery, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's a top 2 or 3 starter on a championship contending team.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's how good he, I don't think he's a true ace anymore.
Yeah, we'll have to see him.
We'll have to see, but then every time you think he can't do something.
Alien.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do have a small amount of breaking news from the A's. They have, the A's have hired former pitcher Dave Stewart as a special assistant to player development.
Hey, shout out to Stu.
Yeah, he's going to... He's going to work with Director of Player Development, Ed Sprague.
Ed Sprague.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it sounds like he'll be around a lot.
I think Ed Sprague used to be the...
Third baseman on the Toronto...
I think he was the head coach at UOP.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to fact check that.
He's
right
a
now.
Basketball
I think that's right.
lifer. I'm a baseball lifer.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
We'll get Stu on.
Oh, I forgot to turn that on.
He's great. Shout out to Dave Stewart, now working with the A's.
Yeah. I don't know what that means for him and his NBC Sports Bay Area ties, but we'll
I don't
see.
Know what it does for that. And then he's also part of a group trying to get a Major League Baseball team in Nashville.
Yes, yeah, he's been part of that team that looking at Tampa Bay, and I don't know, maybe he's going to shift gears here. Maybe there's potential for him to do more with the A's.
Very odd.
He's super cool. Oh, hey. Like, have you ever?
Oh, the coolest.
Yeah, I got to sit in the green room and hang out with him a couple of times. He's absolutely amazing.
Great guy. Not the voice you expect coming out of Dave Stewart.
No, for the intimidator he was on the mound.
Very soft voice.
Yeah, very soft voice.
Yeah. Speaking of baseball, the 2025 Hall of Fame class was announced yesterday. Billy Wagner, in his 10th and final ballot, former left-handed closer, made it in. CC Sabathia, on his first ballot, also made it in. Ichiro Suzuki, one vote shy of being a unanimous selection.
I want to know who it is, and he needs to have his vote revoked.
This is it's one of those things where we may never know.
Oh, boo.
But there are people who track these things publicly. And at some point, I hope that everybody bands together and says, okay, we're all going to publish at least that we voted for Ichiro so we can whittle down who didn't. And the person that didn't, I would love to know why. Like, that's why I want to know. Not because I want to go torches and pitchforks, not because I want them fired, not because I want to go, okay, hey, let's sit down and let's have a conversation. Why didn't you vote for Ichiro Suzuki for the Hall of Fame?
I mean, it's an embarrassment, man. The guy came over at age 27, had over 3,000 hits after the age of 27, and has another 1,200 hits in Japan.
I mean,
like, realistically, he's the all-time hit leader.
He is.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible what he did as a player. He was a five-star arm in any outfield position he was.
Yes.
A five-star, five-tool player, stole bases.
Rookie of the year.
Yep.
10-time All-Star, 10-time Gold Glove winner, 3-time Silver Slugger, 2-time batting champion. Did I say MVP? He was an MVP. Ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't
understand. Led the league in steals as a rookie, 242 hits and 56 steals in his first year in the majors. You think if he had come in as a 21-year-old, he's not getting to 4,000 hits? Get out of here.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
1,000%. I'm sorry. Kenny Caraway in the building for the handoff. I didn't mean to leave you out. What's up,
Kenny? No, you're good. I was, you know, I came in a little early, so, you know.
No, I love that.
Y'all handle business. Ichiro, I never forget. It was the first time I had seen this.
Mm-hmm.
But the throw he made, maybe his rookie year in Oakland from right field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it Jermaine Dye?
I think it might have been Terrence Long.
Oh, that's definitely who it was.
On a line.
Just a seed.
Like, it hit him in the chest. It wasn't even like, oh, down there by, you know, about to hit the ground. Like, no, it could have went another 75 feet in the air.
And it, like, flattened out.
Oh, my gosh. That was sick. I know Dave Parker made a throw like that.
Yeah.
Maybe in the early 80s, late 70s that I saw later. But
Parker made the throw in the All-Star game.
Okay.
Yeah, it was in the All-Star game. And then Roberto Clemente always had an absolute cannon. Yeah.
Roberto made one. I think Vlad made one of those throws before, too. Vlad Guerrero made one. But, I mean, Ichiro was, he was amazing. He was absolutely.
Didn't Bo Jackson do it in the All-Star game, too?
No, he just climbed the
fence. He hit the home run at Angel Stadium.
Off of Rick
Russell. He had a sick throw too.
Poor little 6-year-old Casey, my boy Rick Russell, giant starter,
big daddy
on the mound. Let's go, All Star game. Let's go. And then Bo Jackson just takes him.
Quick out.
I was so hurt.
He hit that so far.
6-year-old.
So two things.
6-year-old Casey was so hurt.
He hit that ball so far.
Number one, my first Giants game ever, I went and saw Rick Russell pitch a two-hitter against the Mets when the Mets were really good. They're coming off their, like, the 86 championship, right? Rick Russell threw a two-hitter. One of them was Wally Backman hit a dribbler up the middle that hit him.
Mm.
And the other one was Wally Backman hit a dribbler up the middle that didn't hit him but went up the middle. The first one hit him and rolled to, like, short, and they couldn't get him out.
Yeah.
But that was it. Like, I was so bored as a young kid. Like, oh, this is horrible. The other thing
Daddy
is
Rich Russell.
Ichiro, in his first 10 seasons in Major League Baseball, had 200 hits or more in all 10.
Come on.
Coming out of his, like, he had 2,244 hits in his first 10 seasons.
It's ridiculous.
In the league. As a rookie, he had 242 hits.
He was amazing.
Yeah, 56 amazing. Stolen bases. Yeah, even his stolen base number is nuts.
Did you ever watch Ichiro take BP?
No.
Ichiro could hit tanks.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Like, that's what was amazing about him, is he'd get into these games and he'd hit these, like, choppers to short and beat him out and these little, like, lobs into center field, and you're like, God, so frustrating. And then you watch him couple times in BP, per BP session, he would just tie into one. It's like, man, I could hit 300 homers if you wanted to.
Unbelievable back control.
Just, yeah.
It's unreal. Now, I don't want to be that guy.
Uh-oh.
Kennedy didn't vote for him.
Especially that guy in Northern California. But the Baseball Hall of Fame, they can't really get my attention. And I like CeCe. I love CeCe, actually. I love Ichiro. Like, and Wagner, I mean, it was great. So I don't want to take away from their moment, but Baseball Hall of Fame, like, don't even talk to me until you do what you're supposed to do.
That's, I mean,
don't even talk.
That's baked into all of this.
Yeah. Like, don't even talk. I always say, it's a museum, bro.
That's it.
Like, just tell the story of the game.
That's it.
That's all you got to do. If you want to put all the stuff on Bonds' plaque about how he's suspected, do that. Find that. If you want to put a little side, fine. Tell the story, but don't act like we didn't see what we saw.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
He still has stuff in the Hall of Fame. He's just not himself in
Correct.
The Hall of Fame.
Like, he's acknowledged in the Hall of Fame. They've just not made him a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
Have you guys been to Cooperstown?
Yeah,
I have.
I went there when I was 11.
Oh, you got to go again. It's just,
you know what I remember?
Family trip to Cooperstown. Put it on the list.
You know what I remember? Well, I'm not going until Bonds is in there. But you know what I remember is I was like, because we went on a family reunion. It was in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
We drove up to New York City. We was in New York City for a little while. And I just remember New York City to Cooperstown. Oh, my gosh.
Bro,
like, I'm never taking this drive again.
Mission. Beautiful drive.
Yeah.
Yes. Upstate New York's gorgeous.
I can appreciate it as an adult. But at the time, I was like, I'll never do this again. This is awful.
Yeah.
It's a long drive. But the Field of Dreams is amazing.
No, it was really cool.
Yeah.
Double day field.
I thought it like
Field of Dreams is in Iowa.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Double A field, the
field that they have there.
Yeah,
so. Incredible. Like, it's a great experience. I would fully recommend it. I'm the opposite of you guys. I'm okay with Barry Bonds not being in the hall. Sorry,
James, a hater.
And it's not even Barry Bonds. All these guys put Clemens in there. Put all these guys.
Yeah,
in there.
Trying to tell the story. Profiting off of steroid users the way baseball did.
Yeah.
Steroids saving the sport, and then trying to act like that never existed.
And, like, you got guys in there that were like, we don't know about. I'm not saying he did, but are we sure Ivan Rodriguez didn't do nothing?
No, are we positive? He 100% did. David Ortiz did, too.
I mean,
yeah.
So they're
Come
in
on.
There.
Yeah,
they're in there. So, like, what are we doing?
Yeah, there's some question marks. The guys who got around it, who didn't get called out, or even did with Ortiz got called out, but for some reason they never pinned it on
because he's Big Poppy. He's so clutch, and everybody loves him.
Yeah.
He's just a jovial guy. Everybody loves David Ortiz.
What they do?
Nah, I'm ignoring what's happening over there.
What they do? The Mitchell Report.
I'm in the right. I'm on the right side of history.
When every team in the league had a person in the Mitchell Report except for the Red Sox. Come on, man.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, man. What are we doing?
There's some crazy stuff that happens for sure. I don't know. We were looking this morning, and I'm like, Billy Wagner, a little bit questionable as a Hall of Famer.
Well,
I'm trying
not to do that.
Gonna get Jerry Jones on Billy Wagner going to the Hall of Fame?
Well, I mean, look, he was no Jay Novacek.
Well, that's not what I wanted.
Well, I like that song too because I was at Morton's last night and they had that in the radio. But he was no Jay Novacek
song on the radio. Can you imagine? The day's best hit.
I'm just like, we looked up like all-time save leaders, and I'm like.
Is he top 25?
Yeah, he's top like six or something, but John Franco's right above him, and John Franco has a whole bunch more wins. Mm. And it's like, hey, why is John Franco in an era that didn't value the save as much?
Mm-hmm.
Why is he not in the hall? But now you have Billy Wagner in the hall. I'm just confused. And then there are two current pitchers that are above him, Kimbrel, and then who is the other guy? I didn't even know who he was.
That's a good question.
Red Sox closer.
Papelbon?
Jonathan Papelbon?
No.
I don't know.
No, Papelbon is in the top like 15, which is why I was like, I'm not.
Can I ask Kenny this question real quick?
Yeah.
Is there any player playing a sport better than Nikola Jokic is playing basketball right now?
Might have to think about that.
That's why I was trying to get to it, and then we got sidetracked.
Sorry.
So I wanted to. No, it's fine. We have until 54:30.
Okay.
So.
I mean, Ohtani.
That was the one that we kind of came up with. Like Lamar had
Otani.
had a great year.
I mean, I don't want to be a homer, but Domantas Sabonis is playing at a crazy level. I'm not saying he's Jokic, but like he's.
Do you know
what
Jokic
like
is
right
averaging
there.
This year?
30 something?
30, 13, and 10.
Ooh.
Sorry, 30, 13, and 9.9. And he's shooting 47.5% from three on four a game.
Yeah, he's second. I don't mean to, I'm not dissing him, but when I saw that, I was looking for like where Sabonis was, obviously he was first. Mm-hmm. And then I looked, I was like, oh, snap, Jokic is second. Yeah. That's crazy.
He's cooking.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, well. All right, we're going to stop the disrespect. Giannis Antetokounmpo. Who is the best player in the world? He's the best player in the world. No
Giannis
shot at
right
Jokic.
Now?
Yeah. Giannis is the best player in the world.
Interesting.
No shot at Jokic. No shot at Jokic. I'm just saying Giannis is the best player in the world.
Why do you say that?
I mean, he does pretty much everything Jokic does, and he's a premier defender.
Okay. Right. And to your point, just so you know, Shea is number one in win shares right now. Jokic number – well, they're tied at 9.2. Mm-hmm. Domantas Sabonis is number four. He's number four in offensive win shares. He's he's not on defensive win shares.
Giannis is shooting 15% from three this year.
Damn.
Oh. Ooh. Hate it for our guy. All right, we got to go. D'Lo and KC coming up next. They're hanging out with you till 4. James Hamm and I are done until 10 a.m. tomorrow. This has been The Insiders. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Until tomorrow at 10, drink water, be nice to people. See you.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.